Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Dirt and Sprague on Football Friday on 1080 The Fan.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Tapped by Coors Light. Ducks fans, as you power up for game day, grab some frost-brewed Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer. Please drink responsibly.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. 106 on The Fan. Dirt and Sprague with you. Hope you're enjoying your Friday afternoon. We get you ready for the weekend. A lot in our first hour. You can catch it at 1080thefan.com, on-demand section, Les Schwab Tires podcast. And we have a lot we're going to get to here in hour number two. And I want to start with Oregon State. They take on California. And for all the talk about Washington State and Oregon and game day, the Beavs are kind of sitting at home, coming off a bye, homecoming weekend, Cal coming in off a 30-point loss to winless UCLA. And I think Beaver fan is sitting there going, hey, this is our weekend. This is our chance. Maybe even more so than they did Arizona. I'm wondering what a win this weekend does for the program. Even though it just be the second win, what does it do for Jonathan Smith and what I like to call year zero?
I think it does a ton for you. It really does. It goes back to something that Crystal Ball was talking last week about. And you just in asking him what a win would mean against Washington, and then he talked about it after the game, and the thing that he circled on was a validation for everything that you're doing, all the work that you're putting in, all the preparation time to get a win like that. It validates all of the work, and that's where I look at Oregon State this weekend with a chance to validate what they've done this year. When you're a young football team, there's not that high level expectations on you, but you can only have so many moral victories to sell to your players. You hung there with Arizona State. All right, good effort. We had a chance to be within a touchdown in the third quarter, got away late, but still you liked the fight. You liked the effort. Against Washington State, they come to your place. You got a lead in the fourth quarter against a team that's now ranked in the top 25, and their offense is as good as anybody's in the country. You had your chance. It slipped away late, but still you feel good about the fight that you showed. After a while, I feel like those become stale for not only a team, but for a fan base. If you come out in this game and it's back and forth and you have a chance to win and it slips through your fingers late, it's going to be tough to continue to sell that week in and week out. And I think this win would be huge for him, not only for the fan base, just to say, all right, we got one in the conference. It's not going to be a 1-11 season. I know it's not a huge deal to go 2-10 instead of a 1-11, but still, it just a win is always nice. But right. Also just to validate it to your team of, guys, look, trust me, the direction that we're going is the right direction. We're seeing it being close, almost beating Nevada, 31 against Ohio State, close against ASU, close against Washington State. Now we have a win to hang our hat on.
I think if you're Jonathan Smith, you're confident that what you've done, despite not being any different than their record last year at this same point, I think you're under the impression the guys are buying in already, even with one win. Now, where I would state that this weekend's win ranks is in that recruiting department and within the belief outside of the program. So it's no secret. The attendance for Oregon State's not been very good this year. This is a weekend where I kind of expect their best attendance to happen. They're coming off a bye. If I'm not mistaken, I believe they're celebrating the Giant Killers.
There's some sort of retro thing going on.
I think that's why Crawford's back
in
town.
The unis are great. They're selling cool gear. Right. They already painted the old Benny logo at midfield, which looks kick-ass.
Yes, and so I think for all of that, you're hoping the players are buying in because of how much better you look offensively. I think if you can get a win, you're helping sell a reality versus you're selling a dream. Now, what I mean by that is, sure, you probably will finish with just two wins because I don't see another possibility of a win here unless some injury happens.
You surprise somebody, you never know.
But the difference is right now you are in the middle of recruiting season. You're about 2 months away from early signing period. Mm-hmm. And though you're not in the running for the 4 or 5-star kids, you still have your eyes on guys where they're looking at you and going, okay, you're telling me you're better. Your record's not different. And maybe record doesn't matter for some of these kids. Maybe it ends up being about fit because they're 2- and 3-star kids. That's fine too. But I think for the fans and for people around the program, when you say, oh yeah, yeah, we're better, hard to do that with the same record, right? Like I can say they're clearly better offensively. Everybody can see that. But if they finish with the same record at 1-11, people would also be quick to point out, well, they got worse defensively. True. So is the program really in a better direction? I think if you can go out this week and you can beat Cal, you're pointing to something. See, better win-loss wise, and we are clearly a different team on the field.
Yeah, I think both Smith and Cristobal for large chunks of the year have been, and I always say this about new coaches, you're recruiting on a blank canvas. I mean, there's nothing to point to. You're recruiting on a vision. You're recruiting on just the trust of the players and where you're telling them that you could take to the program or where you can take the program. But then at some point you have to have something to back it up and say, trust me, I can get it there. Here's why. And Oregon's got that going for them a little bit right now. Look, here's where I'm taking it. We just beat Washington. See, we can hang with these teams. Come be a part of this and we'll get even better. And Oregon State's going to need one of those wins, I think, eventually. The scary part about this weekend, and I think it's a good scary thing because you want to have this feeling. And that is, there is a sense of expectation. Now, I think the fearful part of it is you had this going into the Arizona game.
Right.
You remember the non-conference? You dominated Southern Utah for a good chunk of that game. You scored 31 against Ohio State. You almost beat, without a missed field goal, you almost beat Nevada, and we're 2-1 out of the non-conference. Arizona was playing like dog crap, and you felt, here we go. Here's our chance to win. And they laid an absolute egg.
And I
don't think I've seen more of an emotional roller coaster from Beaver fans in a while since the Gary Anderson stuff than that like 2-3 week stretch where you felt good after the Nevada loss, like, we could have won that game. We got a chance, and then the thing just crashed into the ground.
Right.
And now it's been kind of built back up. But I've always said expectations are good. Like, it sucks as a sports fan because if you don't meet those expectations, it's disappointing. But it's better than being in a place where there are no expectations. The last two games that Oregon State has played at ASU and at home against Washington State, there were no expectations for that game. So you go in, it's like, that's cool, they're hanging, and they end up losing. Now you got that feeling, and I think that's a good place to be. You want your fan base to have an expectation for winning. It is going to be tough, though, this week. I think the matchup you like because Cal's offense sucks.
But Oregon State's defense might be worse.
Oregon State's defense is terrible. Cal's offense is terrible.
Right.
But the McElwain scrambling factor is the one fear thing that I have
for
this game.
I mean, Arizona's running back averaged 10 yards a carry.
Right. And
280 yards.
If I'm Justin Wilcox in that Cal offense, I'm not allowing McElwain to throw anything other than like a bubble screen. And then I'm just saying, run around.
I'm just doing what UCLA did to you a week ago. I'm running it 55 times.
Yeah.
Eno Benjamin went for 300 yards on Oregon State's defense. They're going to give up rush yards. I don't care how bad Cal's playing. And again, I'm not sitting here telling you they're going to win for sure. But I think this is your last chance. If you're going to get a second win this year, this is it. Barring an injury, I don't see another win possibly on this schedule. Next weekend, you go to Colorado. Colorado might get their ass kicked by Washington. Do you think they're just going to lay down when you come to town? So this is an opportunity for them. But you mentioned the Arizona game. It's almost the exact same spread. I think Arizona was 6.5. I think this one is at 7 right now.
Yeah.
So Vegas still thinks you're a touchdown worse than California. I wonder if it's misguided, though, flipping it around a little bit. Is it misguided to have any confidence with a team whose defense is this bad?
No, it shouldn't be. If you can hang in there with Arizona State for 3 quarters, essentially, if you can lead Washington State in the 4th quarter, this is a football team that lost by 30 at home to UCLA last weekend. What were we saying about UCLA a week ago? We were saying that UCLA was worse than Oregon State.
We thought they'd go winless.
We thought they were going to go winless. And that terrible UCLA team just went into Cal and won 37-7. So you should have expectations for this one. The Vegas spread is a little concerning. Like, what do they know that we don't?
Well,
like,
how the defense is that bad.
I know, but Cal saw. Like, Cal's not a good football team, and they are a 7.5-point favorite in your house. So that's concerning to me. But, yes, you should have expectations to hang at least in this football game.
Is Cal a bottom 5 offense in the country? Because Oregon State's defense is. And I think that's what Vegas sees.
I don't know about the country, but they're pretty bad, man.
They're bad, but they can run the ball.
McElwain has turned it over. He's thrown like 7 picks in 3 games. They have given up, I don't know, how many defensive touchdowns the last 3 weeks?
He ran for over 100 yards on Oregon's defense.
He did. He can scramble. He also threw a pick 6, and they turned the ball over 5 times in that game.
This is true. This is true.
So he's going to run around on you. I don't have any doubt about that, but he's going to try and give you chances. He's going to throw you a couple of picks. You just got to capitalize on it.
Right. I like the Beavs this weekend, but we'll see. All right, good weekend in college football. We'll get set for that. What games to look for, and what matchups are we liking outside of the Pac-12? That's next on 1080 The Fan. All right, college football weekend ahead. Got some good games, man. Outside of the Pac-12. 9 a.m., the Michigan Wolverines coming off their thumping of Wisconsin. They travel to Michigan State in East Lansing, where Michigan State is now in the top 25 yet again because they just upset Penn State in Happy Valley. So Michigan State. What are we thinking about this one?
Michigan State is an interesting football team. That was a win last week that surprised me. I didn't see them going into Penn State and winning. And Penn State, I think, will be an interesting one to follow moving forward because they are at Michigan, I believe, next week. So Michigan's got a little bit of a gauntlet going on right now with Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Penn State coming up. I love Michigan in this game. I think they're tired of hearing the Jim Harbaugh can't beat rivals narrative.
Right.
It's one of those. It's like, sure, when you look at the win-loss record, it's not great, and I understand that. But you go back 2 years ago, Michigan lost that game to Michigan State. Do we remember how that game ended?
Was that the punt game?
That was the punt game. They had the lead basically the entire game. They were punting, trying to ice it down, and the punter, for some reason, dropped it and then flipped it up into the air. A Michigan State player caught it, ran it into the end zone as time expired, and Michigan State won that game. Which goes back to the Oregon-Stanford, that's why you don't punt with some time on the clock, because crazy things can happen.
Well, that was different. That was fourth down. They were on their own side of the field.
Sure, I mean, they didn't have a chance.
They would have given Michigan State a shot.
But you could have ran around and throw the ball up in the air, something else like that. But Michigan should have won that game. And then they had the game against Ohio State where most people look back on that one and think JT Barrett didn't get the first down. And if he doesn't, Michigan wins that game in Columbus. So I don't buy into this narrative that he can't beat rivals, and I think that's going to fuel them a little bit. They had a dominating win last week at home against Wisconsin. I think Michigan State and Wisconsin are somewhat comparable in talent this year, and that's what it's looked like so far. I think Michigan rolls in this one.
You think they roll?
Yeah, I love them to cover the spread.
Which, by the way, is a touchdown and a half, depending on the book. Like, rivalry games are always kind of weird. I think when teams are not evenly talented, but not too far apart as Michigan and Michigan State are, it's tough for me to see it more than a touchdown. I do like the confidence that you have there. I do like Michigan as well. The thing about Michigan is if they do what you think they do and they roll, they get Penn State next weekend. And after that, it's basically the Big Ten championship unless they have a random hiccup.
Well, you got Ohio State at the end of the year. You still got to beat Ohio State.
Oh, yeah, touche. I always forget they're in the same division.
Same division.
So you get through
the winner of that game goes on.
Get through these three games, and then you get Ohio State at the end of the year.
And both of them are undefeated because Michigan's loss was an out-of-conference
loss.
Right, they haven't lost a Big Ten game yet.
But imagine if Michigan goes into that game against Ohio State with everything on the line.
Yeah.
I mean, you might be talking about the college football playoff on the line for Jim Harbaugh. If they can beat Ohio State, get in the Big Ten title game, and win the Big Ten, they're in.
They're in that conversation.
There's no disputing that. They're 6-1 right now. They're 4-0 in Big Ten play. I don't know if Michigan's a playoff team. But hell, we thought they were going to be last year potentially, or maybe the year before, and they were close. But this might be the year. Maybe they can do it. Maybe because Jim Harbaugh is laying so below the weeds, nobody's talking about him. I mean, they're 6 in the AP poll. The AP poll doesn't matter. But we talk about all these other teams that are ranked and where they're at. Michigan's not in the conversation with anybody. So if they can go into East Lansing and they can beat Michigan State, especially in the way in which you think they can, that's going to have a lot of people wondering, damn, are they the best team in the Big Ten? Can they beat Ohio State? And I like Ohio State. I think Dwayne Haskins is a great player. He's probably my second pick in the Heisman category right now. But they haven't been that impressive. They've had some big spreads against some bad teams and they can't cover them. Not that that's the end all be all, but I think they're more susceptible than people would give them credit if Michigan can win this game.
Well, the thing about Michigan that I love, first and foremost, it's just their defense. Shea Patterson, I think, is a good quarterback. He's not great. The offensive line isn't, or the offense, excuse me, isn't overly dynamic. But they're phenomenal on the defensive side of the ball. And that's something that I think you look at certain matchups. Last week against Wisconsin, it's why I loved them, because Wisconsin can't throw the ball efficiently. We know how good their running game can be, but you look total yardage. They held Wisconsin to 283 total yards in that game. They picked them off twice. They even ran the ball for 183 yards. They only had 100 passing yards on that Michigan defense. And Michigan State is not dynamic on the offensive side of the ball this year. We've seen them struggle a couple of times this season. And I think the Ohio State one's going to be a whole different can of worms, maybe even Penn State next week, because of what Trace McSorley can do running around and making plays. But when Michigan goes up against an offense that I don't trust, I do love the Wolverines to shut them down.
LSU's been kind of up and down. They just thumped Georgia. Now they're hosting Mississippi State, who I don't think is that good. Do they have a hiccup here?
I mean, it is LSU, right? That's been their whole year this year.
This would cost them the playoff.
I've had two times this year gambling on LSU and winning, and I've had two times this year gambling on LSU and losing. I've liked them a lot in a handful of games. I liked them last week. I didn't think they were going to win by 20, but they were a touchdown and a half underdog at home against Georgia, and that's right. A tough place to play. I think this one will tell you a lot about LSU. Because that's one thing that you can see. It's almost like the Oregon-Washington State thing. It's like, okay, you had a nice win last week. Can you back it up now? Can you come out and play and do it back-to-back weeks? Can you handle the emotions of a win and then do it against another tough team? The concern there, I believe they do get the bye before it, but their next game is at home against Alabama. So I mean, this is a brutal schedule of Florida, Georgia, Mississippi State, and Alabama 4 weeks in a row.
Yeah, that Florida-Georgia line's tough.
If they want to get into that conversation in like a serious team in college football playoff conversations, this is one I think you need to win. Mississippi State's a good team, but it's one that LSU should be able to handle at home.
See, I think they would be in it, but Bama, that's what ruins it. Bama on the schedule.
Well, they'll get their chance, and they get them in Baton Rouge.
They do, yeah.
On November 3rd.
Okay, NC State Clemson. This is one where I kind of feel like you in the Michigan State game. I think Clemson's rolling them.
You love Clemson, yeah.
I do. Clemson, to me, I don't know. I think they're kind of finding themselves a little bit. Trevor Lawrence feeling a little more confident. I know Ryan Finley's a good player for NC State, but I looked up NC State. They've played nobody this year.
Yeah, their best win is, what, probably a two-touchdown win against Virginia.
Great. Virginia's not that great. They barely beat Miami last weekend, and Miami seems to be completely overrated. I like Clemson a lot this weekend against NC State to end their winless streak, or their undefeated season.
That's the tough part about this one is I just haven't seen NC State play much football this year. And they had their one chance against a big-time opponent, but it got canceled because of the hurricane. They were going to play West Virginia at home, or I believe at home. And that game got canceled. So you had an opportunity to see how they would stack up against a team that we know is one of the better ones in the country. Big spreads like that always scare me, but Trevor Lawrence is a hell of a quarterback, man. And it is at Clemson, so that's a tough place to go in and play.
Any other games pique your interest outside of those ones?
One that I am kind of circling, outside obviously the Pac-12 games, which we'll get to a little bit later.
Yeah, we got our Pac-12 pick-ems.
Two other ones I'll circle. One, you like Purdue to keep it close against Ohio State, so that's one to keep an eye on. They're a 12-point favorite on the road at Purdue, Ohio State is. So you can look at that one. And then the other one that I am, it's early morning tomorrow on ABC, Oklahoma at TCU.
TCU is a very strange team, though.
They are a very strange team. I don't think they're that good this year. I overrated them coming into the season. But you look at their three losses. Now, they're 3-3 at this point in the season. Remember, they had to play Ohio State in Dallas, and that was a back-and-forth game. Ohio State eventually pulled away with the last touchdown and win by 12.
I would say TCU outplayed them for most of that game.
Right. They lost to Texas by about two touchdowns. That doesn't look like a terrible loss, and it was at Texas. And people like TCU going into that game, I think they were just disappointed. But Texas has clearly been playing better football. And then last week at home to Texas Tech was a game I believe they were leading basically throughout. And then Texas Tech ended up winning a low-scoring game, which is strange. But they won 17-14. So TCU has been, all three of their games, they've been in. They haven't been blowouts. So it's a tough place to play. Oklahoma, I haven't been overly impressed at times with them this year, so that's why I'm not picking an upset. That's just what I'm circling, because the Big 12's college football playoff hopes are hanging on by a thread. Like, we talk all the time about the Pac-12 being eliminated, but do you see West Virginia, Texas, or Oklahoma winning out? And as of right now, my answer to that would be no, and this would, I think, all but eliminate them, essentially, if Oklahoma is to lose at TCU.
Yeah, I was talking to a media member last night at the Blazer game, and it was funny because we talked college football. And they asked if I really believed Oregon was still in it for the playoff. And I said, yeah, they could be a one-loss Pac-12 winner we've seen this work before. Like, I don't like the elimination factor when it hasn't happened yet. And they basically responded with the Big 12. And I said, well, but let me ask you something. The best team in the Big 12 in terms of resume is Texas, right? Because Oklahoma's beaten nobody. So why does the Big 12 get a nod over the Pac-12? I think they're about the same conference-wise.
Yeah, their best win this year is at Iowa State. Oklahoma's.
You know, that's not a bad team.
Not a terrible
team. West Virginia.
They're 3-3, but...
I think the Big 12 is basically the Pac-12. But because of the Pac-12, the officiating blunder they've had, they get this reputation, whereas I think they're basically right there neck and neck with the Big 12.
And I think also part of it, too, is that Oregon and Washington State at the start of the year weren't in that conversation.
Right.
Texas was. If Washington was still sitting here with one loss, nobody would say that the Pac-12 is eliminated.
Well, right now, I would just say they pegged the wrong teams in the Pac-12 early.
Right, right.
It was Washington, Stanford, USC. Right now, it is Oregon, Washington State.
Yeah, Colorado.
And maybe USC or Colorado, yeah, depending on how you want to look at it. So... It's always a ever evolving narrative within college football. All right, what do you want to do next? Let me choose your own adventure here.
Choose my own adventure moving forward.
Yeah,
we could either do Blazers or some baseball stuff.
I'd be down to talk either. That baseball game sucked, but man, they won in convincing fashion, and they beat Justin Verlander and David Price got his first win.
They did. The Red Sox seem like an unstoppable force right now.
Yeah, hard for me to see either of the NL teams winning, but baseball's done weirder things.
Let's do some baseball.
You want to do some baseball stuff?
Let's do some baseball.
All right, we'll do some baseball stuff next. Talk about the Red Sox going to the World Series. Are the Dodgers about to join them there? That's an iconic matchup, huh? Dodgers, Red Sox. Talk about that next.
Hey, welcome back in. 136. Your Fridays are going well. We had a trade go down in the NFL we haven't talked about yet.
And I think the nature of the trade, like what was exchanged, I think it speaks volumes about the situation for one team.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get to that in a moment. I want to ask you a little Sprague interview about last night because you were in the building last night.
I was in the building,
yes. You were there. You were way up there. They put you all the way up in the nosebleeds. You had your binoculars out.
I was, I got to be honest, at the end of the night, I like to watch guys like LeBron, see what they do when they're mingling with Dame and CJ mainly. Sure. And LeBron was actually, it was pretty cool. He took pictures with every single kid of every single family in person.
Oh, I bet everybody wanted
was
a back. Picture.
And he was really accommodating that way. That was cool. It was weird, though, because he went to the bus area, which is right on a loading dock. And it's him, and it was like two Nike families. You could tell they were from Nike. And then his partner, Maverick Carter, who is in the HBO show that he does. He's basically like his go-to guy. And I was just standing there watching him talk. I was like five feet.
It
was probably a group of 9 people, and they were laughing, and they were talking about flag football and youth football because LeBron's kid, I guess, plays flag football. And I just stood there, and I just watched him talk. And then I kind of snapped out. I'm like, I am the creepy dude.
Yeah, you're that guy right now.
So I just turned around and got the hell out of there. I'm like, what did I do there?
Were you breathing with your mouth while watching them?
No, but it was funny because if they would have saw me walk away, I had a work backpack. It's a LeBron backpack.
Hey, nice backpack, kid.
So I probably just looked like a really weird stalker.
How many LeBron jerseys were there last night? What was the official split? Because it was when LeBron was introduced and when he would dunk, you could hear it. But for the most part, it didn't sound like overwhelming.
Well, I don't know what the intro sounded like on TV. In the arena, he clearly got booed. It was far more boos.
Oh, because it didn't sound that bad on TV.
A pregame purple and gold was a lot. And then once the game started, it was not close to what I thought it would be. I've seen Warrior games far worse, but...
Good for Blazer fans then.
I will say this, 99% of the jerseys last night were brand new LeBron James 23 jerseys.
That doesn't surprise anybody.
Kobe, yeah. Shaq, Magic, 99% were LeBron James jerseys. And I would say from a visual standpoint, like people wearing purple and gold... Probably 80-20 Blazer fan.
I was worried it was going to be in like the 60-40 category.
And then from a cheering standpoint, though, I think people showed up without Laker gear, but they were rooting for LeBron. That was probably more like 65-35 when they'd score. There was a dunk. It got kind of loud.
When you had those moments early on, you had a couple of breakaways right away for LeBron. Like, he had like back-to-back dunk possessions.
With Dame. Him and Dame.
Him and Dame.
That was awesome.
Dunking back and forth
on
each other.
That was pretty cool, yeah.
That was a nice little moment. All right, well, that's not as bad because I wouldn't have blamed any Blazer fan for selling that ticket. Like, I know some people that almost paid for their entire season tickets by selling that thing.
I had somebody tweet me because I said, hey, Blazer fan, confirmed. They made a lot of money on this game. Somebody tweeted me, is like, first time I've ever done it in 15 years of owning season tickets, I made $900 selling my season tickets for tonight's game.
I can't blame people for doing that, man.
That's
a good chunk of money.
I easily would have.
You got the Lakers coming back on the third, too. That's the funny part. They're going to be right back here. You hold on to those ones. You can make decent money out of this. So that's good to hear that it wasn't quite as bad. So the NLCS picks up tonight. A chance for an elimination game. Game six. Did you hear Colin rant and rave this morning about how he doesn't want the Brewers to win because he doesn't know anything about the Brewers?
No, he didn't.
Yeah, he did.
Essentially, he ranted about...
Is that really what his take was?
He doesn't know anything about the Brewers, so he's rooting for L.A. because nobody wants to watch the Brewers and Craig Counsell make pitching changes because one time he made a pitching change after one batter.
His thing is not about that. It's about L.A. Boston. He just wants the markets.
That was his whole take.
The Brewers are kind of... They're a fun team to watch. This has been... I know the Dodgers are on the brink of eliminating them. This has been a good series.
It's been a nerve-wracking series, too, especially if you have, you know, interest in one of the teams, but I think the whole key for the Dodgers has been in the games that they have won, they've been able to get Kane and Yelich out on a consistent basis.
Yeah, Yelich has not done much in this series since he started. So game one of the NLDS, remember he hit that home run against the Rockies. He went 2-3.
Has he done anything since that game?
Since that game one against the Rockies, he is 3-25.
Oof.
8 walks, 5 strikeouts, no extra base hits or RBIs.
Yeah, he hasn't been much of a threat. He had a moment in the last game where he came up to bat and it was an opportunity, and he popped right out to third base, and you're just like, that's supposed to be the MVP.
He's got good numbers against Ryu, who's throwing, I think he's 3-9 in his career against Ryu, double and a home run. So maybe if you're a Brewer fan, you want to cling to that bad boy. The other thing that Milwaukee does have going in their advantage tonight is the hater usage, having the travel day there. That's one. I think if they get a lead in like the fifth inning, they're going to bring him in and let him throw 4 innings. Like, just
why not?
Throw that guy's arm off. There's no point in fearing about pitch counts at this point.
That atmosphere is going to be stupid electric too.
How badly is Manny Machado going to get booed when he steps up at the top of the first?
Easily the biggest.
Oh, it'll be loud.
Even with Puig, he will be easily number one.
I think he kind of eats it up though.
Oh, he's one of those guys. He embraces the hate a little bit.
What's the better matchup for the World Series? Let's stay away from the city because we know that's the reason people want that. What team-wise, what's the best matchup for Boston? What makes it a good World Series? Who makes it a good World Series?
The tough part, honestly, man, at this point, with the way David Price threw last night, it's hard for me to even go there.
It just feels like it's Boston's year.
The weakness was Craig Kimbrell, but they're saying that he was tipping pitches the last 2 weeks. They identified it, and he had a pretty clean bottom of the ninth last night.
He got out of it, yeah.
That's just how loaded their offense is, the way they're starting. Chris Sale only threw one game in that series. He seemingly will be back and healthy. David Price finally won himself a game. He was dominant last night in Houston, which isn't easy to do against that lineup. Their bullpen is solid before Kimbrell. That is just a monster team, man. 108 wins. They've steamrolled their way here.
Yeah.
I think and there is some truth to Colin selling this from the standpoint, if you get the Dodgers, you can have Kershaw against Sale.
TV ratings will be bigger with LA, no doubt.
Well, yeah, but...
Well, I just wish he would come out and say that's why he wants that, rather than don't try to sell me on pitching changes and just be honest. You don't watch the Brewers, and LA Boston is clearly a sexier matchup for your network. Yeah.
Well, I think the
Brewers lineup causes the Red Sox pitchers more problems than the Dodgers lineup.
Yeah.
I mean, if Sale goes, I mean, he could get 20 strikeouts.
It won't happen.
The Dodgers,
It won't happen because one is not a number one. Nothing would be better to me than if David Price and Clayton Kershaw went in game 7 against each other.
And it ended up being like a 15-14 game.
It's a choke off.
They're both like out of the game in the second inning or something like that.
Did you see the narrative now is, did David Price eliminate the choking label after last night's performance?
How do you pitch in the World Series? It would be my follow-up question to that. Because if you get shelled in whatever game, game 3, you'll probably start in the World Series. If he gets shelled in that game, then no. We've seen Kershaw pitch great in the postseason. A lot of his starts in the postseason are great.
Well, he was great before the World Series last year.
There's just a couple of those moments that stand out to you.
Yeah.
Game 5 last year, then game 7, he was great.
Right.
It's about consistency, and when the spotlight is the brightest, how do you perform?
Yeah, Price got a little A-Rod in him.
really good ball player, but he was struggling so much in postseason play. If all he needs is 1 year. A-Rod only had one good year in the playoffs.
2009, he got that World Series ring, yep, man. So it continues tonight. Red Sox. Did you watch much of that game last night? My rotation was interesting because I really was intrigued with that Stanford-Arizona State game. Then the Blazer game started. I know that was a boring game, but I wanted to watch it because I like watching Pac-12 football. And then that one, when it got to 4-0, I kind of turned that one out of my rotation. It just peaked at the score.
Well, I had to sit in section 408, which is on the roof of the Moda Center. And I had to use my laptop. We didn't have TVs. We didn't have stats. We could barely see anything. So I streamed. I used my streaming service, and I watched Boston. They got to, it might have been 4-0.
Yeah.
And I kind of did the same thing. I'm like, well, that's over. So then I had Stanford, Arizona State the rest of the way, and then I watched the basketball game.
All right. Hey, we had a trade in Major League Baseball. My mind's on baseball. We had a trade in the NFL today. Who got sent where? What are the messages that are being sent? We'll get into those. Crunch time next on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, crunch time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. Sprague was at the glorious House of Gains this morning because he's a psycho.
Yeah, I'm...
Dude, you have issues, man. I'm worried about you. I'm worried about you.
For
intervention. Intervention time right now.
Why?
Intervention time. What time did you get home from the Blazer game last night?
Probably about 12:30.
Okay, so we're talking about falling asleep around 1?
More like 1:45, because you know how it is after a
Blazer
game.
Takes a while. You're a little jacked up. It was a big game last night.
It's weird, because you're not jacked up, but then you realize you kind of are.
Yeah, it's kind of coursing through your veins a little bit.
Yeah, so I just wandered around downstairs and tried to be quiet.
And then what time did you wake up to go work out this morning?
4:45.
You have issues.
Well,
there's this thing. I'm trying to think of the word. What's it called? Sleep. And it's pretty vital and important to your long-term health.
I'll take a nap right after the show today. A little cat nap in my car. We're good.
That's all you need.
It's kind of like...
get some sleep, damn it.
I view sleep and eating along the same lines. It may not work for everybody, but it works for me in the sense of I might sleep for 3 or 4 hours at night, but you know what? The next day I'll make up with it. I'll take like an hour nap.
Yeah, you get
that
one of those
turns
long,
into 5 hours.
Bear hibernation sleeps.
Yes. Yeah. And the same with eating. I might not eat much lunch.
4 almonds.
But dinner, guess what? I'm going to eat a good dinner. Now, calorie-wise, it's all working out for the day.
It's all evening out.
Yes. I'm Jerry Seinfeld with my life.
It all balances, man. I break even. Hey, we had a trade in the National Football League today.
I saw this, and I think there's a telling thing about this trade.
Okay, here's the deal if you haven't missed it, or if you have missed it, and if you haven't heard Swigard's updates. The Jacksonville Jaguars have traded a 5th-round pick to the Cleveland Browns. For Carlos Hyde. He has 382 yards and 5 touchdowns. Hyde does so far on the year. He's been sharing time with Chubb. I know some Browns fans have been upset that Duke Johnson's not getting more look.
Yeah, he's a good player.
I like Duke Johnson. This is basically them kind of saying, Nick Chubb, you're the guy. Go out and do it. But also, what does it say about Jacksonville? I think that's what people are wondering about.
Well, now the Browns have a Chubb, and I think they're excited at what that can mean for their team this weekend, taking on Tampa Bay. You know, a 5th-round pick... It's not a 2nd or 1st, but a 5th is a good pick. You can find some value in the draft at 5. I think this is kind of an indicator that Fournette injury really is, and we already know he's been missing all this time.
Missed, 3 straight games, and I think they've already ruled him out for this week?
He's out this weekend. Yeah. I think it's a lot more serious than letting on. I think that's why they traded a 5th, because Carlos Hyde's a good back, but Cleveland is stacked at that position. They have the young guy already. He was getting more touches. And so you give Jacksonville a position they need to give a 5th-round pick. I just think that's a little telling. I think that's maybe writing on the wall that Leonard Fournette's injury not only serious because he's missing games, but maybe worried about it a little bit even when he comes back to play.
Yeah, the Browns now, by the way, look at this. So they, in the upcoming NFL draft, I feel like this is what we always say about the Browns, but they're doing it again this year. They now have their own picks in rounds 1 through 6. So wherever they finish up, they'll get those picks. They got a 3rd-rounder from New England for Danny Shelton.
They got this fifth rounder from Jacksonville for Carlos Hyde. They got a fifth rounder from New England for Josh Gordon and a conditional seventh round pick from Jacksonville for the trade of Cody Kessler. They have stockpiled draft picks once again, the Cleveland Browns.
Cody Kessler.
Yeah, they got a seventh round pick for that bad
boy. Is he out of the NFL already?
I believe he's still in Jacksonville. Is he not in Jacksonville? Did they cut him?
I don't know their quarterback situation.
I don't know either, but they traded him for a seventh round pick. So the Browns are stockpiling. Yeah, I think this is an interesting one both ways, because it does leave you fearful for the Jags about what it means about Leonard Fournette, because without him, that offense is going to struggle. Carlos Hyde's okay, but he's not a dominant back, and he's not going to go wild. He only had 382 yards in, what, five games in Cleveland. So
right. They want more Chubb.
He wasn't overly dynamic. And, yeah, I think that it tells you. And Chubb, is his numbers, when you look at yard per carry and what he's done, it's been a limited role because he's been behind Carlos Hyde. But they want him to take on that role. He was a stud in college.
Right.
He's been kind of hidden behind Carlos Hyde. And this also frees up some money for them, because they gave Carlos Hyde a decent contract, I want to say, in the offseason. Not a ton of money,
but San Francisco,
he was a free agent from San Francisco, and they paid him. So now Cleveland's even got more cap space and more draft picks, and they like their rookie running back.
Not going to put it in my spring in the line, and the NFL is one of the harder things to predict. Loving the Browns' money line this weekend. They're in Tampa. Tampa's coming off that emotional loss. That defense is not very good. And Cleveland playing so poorly last weekend, everybody wants to write them off.
Yeah.
Loving that Browns money.
Liking that Browns.
I just
want to
throw that out there now that we're on the Cleveland Brown conversation.
Hey, my Browns are looking good, baby. And one of our P1s did point out that TJ Yeldon also expected out this week for Jacksonville. He's been their backup back. So they got nobody healthy back.
You're right.
There.
And I totally spaced TJ Yeldon in my mind because
he's still in Jacksonville.
Was the fill-in for
he
him.
Was, yeah. So he's banged up too. So they got all sorts of injuries. Carlos Hyde traded from Cleveland to Jacksonville today for a fifth round pick.
Boy, that's going to change the Super Bowl wins. The winds and the sail. That trade right there.
I fell flat a little bit. You're better than that.
What?
You're better than that.
What do you mean? That wasn't a joke.
Yeah, a little bit. Fell flat.
Okay.
A little disappointed. You can do better. That's all I'm saying. Your Chubb jokes were funny. I thought those were good. You were on too hot of a roll. You kept it going. You got to know when to leave. You got to leave on a high note.
I was the guy that didn't stop telling the
you
joke.
Did. You got to leave on a high note. You, right. know, you had a high note and then you...
Right. Well, you know, like sometimes you get stuck in this dad joke life.
Right.
You just keep going.
That's what dad jokes
are about.
Keep it rolling. Hey, lots to get to in the final hour. We will spray the line coming up at 2:30. Get your fixed sponsors in. 55305 is the Better You Today text line. Kevin Todd will join us. We'll see if we can pick some winners. We'll let you know what our parlay thoughts are for this weekend. We got to lock that bad boy in after the show. Some final thoughts on Oregon and Washington State. Some numbers that I am having an eye on for that battle between the Ducks and the Cougs up in Pullman. But we'll start in the Pac-12 with our Pac-12 picks. How did we do last night? And then we'll pick the rest of the games. Start the final hour there. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.